Amen. I think that's got to be one of my favorite songs. Aren't you grateful Jesus cares? And I know I'm no match for today. You aren't either, but He is. And we can trust Him. I'm so grateful He cares. Well, I am just reflecting on where we've been last night and where we're going today. And I just want to encourage us as men that the enemy's biggest goal in all of our lives is to paralyze. God's greatest goal in all of our lives is to mobilize us. The enemy's goal is to get abilities of life by caving to pressure, caving to anger, caving to depression, and caving to hopelessness. But there's never a greater picture of strength than being able to take the pressures and responsibilities that I and for us to navigate the impossibilities before us, go forward with dignity and embrace those challenges with honor. There's nothing more challenging in our lives than embracing impossibilities and difficulties and challenges, especially being able to lead forward with faith. Let us not for one day in our lives begin to think that somehow meekness is weakness. There's never a greater display of awesome strength demonstrated from the Spirit through the middle of conflict. And I'm convinced that as we consider many subjects of need and as men, I really have come to believe that being able to navigate conflict, impossibilities, difficulties, challenges, lies at the very foundation of many other areas of our lives. Purity is a big issue for all of us men, but I've come to realize that if we can help a man anger, we almost help him in so many, including purity and other arenas of our lives, because these two areas happen to be often more foundational than any other addictive behavior. Well, I'm encouraged about today, and today I want to just give a perspective of where we're going, and I want to start off this morning with, if you're sitting in the pew here this morning thinking, well, I know I'm definitely not angry, I want us to just consider some thoughts this morning that may help us reconsider that possibility. In the next session, yes. Okay, if someone has the, you don't want your seats to be wet, the silver Jeep. All right, if you got a silver Jeep, you can make your way out and grab that. That way we won't have to deal with anger later today. Why am I so angry? We're going to look at that this first session, and then we're going to talk about how we navigate conflict. And the answer to navigating conflict is not somehow handing you a set of handcuffs or handing you tape to put around your mouth, okay? We've got to have more than both of those. We don't need a punching bag. We need something that really gives us traction forward, because the reality is, as we walk out of these doors, perhaps even before, God forbid, we'll navigate conflict. Being able to have perspective on what is the answer for transforming anger. Then the last session I want to look at today is experiencing the God of all hope in the hour of all hopelessness. Okay? We'll wrap the day up looking at some thoughts for depression. Why am I so angry? I want to give the personal illustration, and then we're going to look at some Bible case studies and test your Bible knowledge here. I remember when I was probably 12 years old, I was in the backyard. We lived in South Carolina, and I was screaming my head off something. I still can't remember what it was, but I wasn't upset. I know that doesn't seem possible for those of you who know me. I seem like such a docile individual, but I was upset, so much so. My mom called me in and nearly grabbed me by the collar and sat me down and said, "Ron, you got a real problem with anger. You got a real problem with bitterness." I tell you what, I was, first of all, just overwhelmed. Two words. To get a hold of my attention, I'm thinking, absolutely I'm not angry, absolutely I'm not bitter. She had a conversation with me all afternoon, and I can tell you for the next 10 years of my life, I've never forgot that conversation, obviously still haven't, but over the next 10 years, I began really trying to process this fact of what does the portrait of anger actually look like. I had come to learn how to keep my mouth shut, or perhaps anger without displaying it so obviously, and yet I found so much restlessness in my soul for those 10 years. I would find myself surprising myself under pressure, saying things I never expected to say. And the thing that would light my fire the most was out of someone I cared about. I would feel like to be the peacemaker in this situation, I'm going to set this situation, kind of like Peter, I'm going to whip out my sword and solve this here and now. And I always had a good perspective of who was right and who was wrong, and whoever was my friend always had to be right, didn't matter what the case was, right? And I quickly discovered what the writer of Proverbs says so descriptively, he that meddleth with a matter belonging not to him is like one that grabs a dog by the ears. What a descriptive proverb. Have you ever tried to grab a dog by the ears? Does it make that dog just love you? He's ready to bite your hand off, right? And you know what? I would walk away from those thinking, what in the world? How did we go from an upsetting situation to an inferno? And I was the one that was here to set this situation straight. I was convinced I was never the one at fault, because after all, I was here to be the peacemaker. Came to realize, wow, the power of taking up an offense can be one of the most incredible ways, one of the most unassuming ways. We end up becoming very angry. It's one of the most unassuming ways we end up exasperating the situation. Well, there's a lot of things that we can consider as we think about anger, and all of us can think of perhaps the profile of an angry person who's finds themselves on the threshold of an emotional inferno and takes their fist and pounds a hole into the wall or rips the doors off its hinges. Perhaps you've known an individual like that. But I am convinced that actually the worst display of anger, the anger that kills the most, is anger. That was the anger I was a master of. And I can think about walking into a knick-knack store. I don't go in there on purpose to shop. I'm usually following mom or sis, okay? They're always the one shopping for those kinds of things. But I love being able to come across some fascinating sayings. And one of those that jumps out to me, we've seen in different places, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Now, is that true? And I just want to pause for just one quick moment, because one of my observations from counseling is if mom ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. But in a lot of ways, no one sets the atmosphere for a home more than us men. Even if it's by a cold blanket, wet blanket of silence. Anger shows its way, its head in a lot of different ways. I want to look at that here this morning. We're all Bible students, okay? So I have just pulled some profiles here from the Bible, okay? No hints here, but I'm sure someone can guess who these are. Let's just look at these quickly. And I want you to just be thinking what some of the underlying causes of anger portrayed in these. I could not stand seeing someone mistreat my native people. God had given me a special calling to rescue them from their enemies, but when I tried to fulfill God's plan my way, I did the unthinkable and ended up having to hide myself because of the overwhelming shame I felt. I thought God could never use me again, but God transformed me into the meekest man that ever lived. Who is he? That's great. God had richly blessed our home because we had dedicated ourselves to honor the Lord. But I was unprepared when tragedy struck and reduced our lives to nothing. I was so angry at God because he was so unfair that I encouraged a family member to give up on God. Wow, she's unnamed. We know her as Job's wife. You realize the influence we all carry in how even courage or discourage someone else navigating a difficult situation? I was enviable by appearance. Held the highest office in the land. But I felt very insecure and threatened if anyone outshined others' successes would make me so angry. My insecurity would even make me perceive that people were against me who in fact really weren't. King Saul, one of the most incredible biographies we have in the Bible, is given us in the book of 1 Samuel. The life of King Saul. One of the most profound studies on the subject of anger. I was angry that my brother deceived me and took from me something that belonged to me. I vowed to kill my brother, but was divinely hindered on two occasions. However, I held on to deep resentment and instilled that resentment against my brother and my descendants. Esau, you're exactly right. I think we got just a couple more. I was angry that God had insisted that I reach into my enemies' lives with an offer of mercy. When my enemies were responsive, I was even more infuriated that God was so compassionate. I was so mad at God, I begged God to kill me. I was the one in charge. I felt I had the right to demand whatever I wanted from those under my care, regardless of what it would cost. I could not get what I wanted. I went to my bedroom to sulk. I could not eat or do anything. Anger that looks like sitting in the bedroom sulking? Yes, that's the life of Ahab. I guess I do have a couple more. When I was approached about a citizen's mistreatment of another citizen in my kingdom, I was infuriated and ordered excessive punishment, only to be confronted with the fact that I was guilty of the very thing I was condemning in someone else. God brought me to my knees and I repented. David, oh, so much to learn from 2 Samuel chapter 12. Here's one more Bible case study. I was surprised out of my wits when my colleague showed up one night with a band of soldiers to arrest my best friend. I was enraged. In my anger, I determined to wield my sword to defend my friend. My friend insisted I put the sword away. By my friend's example, I discovered the power of overcoming evil with good. At the end of my life, I penned a letter on how to navigate reading 1st and 2nd Peter are some of the most powerful books that come from the most unexpected author as we read through the Gospels. I want to now give some other case studies. I think three here. And in these are stories I have simply made up, okay? So I want you to know this is nobody I was thinking of in this room. I made these up years ago. But maybe this helps us to consider some things. Kurt's a dedicated Christian, and he's one of the most amiable people you would ever meet in public. But at home, things are different. At the most unexpected times, Kurt erupts into an uncontrollable rage over the seemingly most insignificant issues. He always eventually cools down, comes to objectivity, profusely apologizes for his temper, and promises never to lose his temper again. But broken promises are driving a wedge between him and others. And he comes to you for help, okay? We want to be able to help him. And we want to offer him something better than just a punching bag. We want to offer him something better than us the list of verses to memorize. That's an important thing, absolutely, in his journey. We want to help him with something more than just a masking tape to zip his lips closed, right? How about David? He's 35 years old. He's a Christian man. He's married to Starla. She's got three children. David and Starla met in Bible college 9 years ago and are involved in a Bible preaching church. Church, they look like a model family, but all 9 years of marriage have been marked by great conflict. David accuses Starla of spending money carelessly, not submitting to his leadership. Starla, however, feels that no matter what she does for David, David always reacts. David's very demanding in his expectations. He's always angry. He only uses the Bible to enforce stricter standards in their home and to point out everyone else is wrong. David and Starla don't want divorce, and they come to you. Then one more. Thomas is 39. He's been married to Arizona for 30. She's age 37. Been married for the last 8 years. For several years, their marriage was happy, but over the last year, their relationship has been marked by much conflict. No matter how hard Arizona tries to please Thomas, Thomas has become noticeably irritable and critical. Nothing's ever good enough. Thomas has gradually grown emotionally cold and distant. The smallest offense becomes the biggest conflict. There's never a resolution to anything because Thomas just retreats to the garage, putter around, and sulks for a couple days before returning to some measure of, quote, normal communication. Well, I don't know where you find yourself in these, but I can see myself in several of these kind of case studies. What we want to do here this morning is to consider, why in the world am I so angry? I want us to first consider all the different faces of anger, and this does show up in your book, I think, under last night's notes, page number 6. And when we think of anger, anger manifests itself a lot of different ways. And the ways I've listed on page 6 are certainly not comprehensive. We can express our anger by just exploding with blame. We're never the one at fault. It's always someone else. In the last two services that I've been in, Sunday and then Wednesday, I had two men that God providentially brought into my path who just opened up and said, I am struggling, exploding with anger. One guy came to service that Sunday morning and he was just over the edge with anger. He said, I didn't This morning, I don't feel like I can punch a hole in the wall. He said, the pain's so great, I'm just sitting in the service just crying. And it's incredible to realize how anger can impact every single one of our lives in a lot of different ways. He said, well, wasn't for my wife. I wouldn't be angry if it wasn't for my kid. I wouldn't be angry if it wasn't for my boss. I wouldn't be angry if it wasn't for my school principal. I wouldn't be angry if it wasn't for my employer. Often we somehow feel justified by our response because somehow someone else is the one at fault. Perhaps sometimes our display of anger looks like arguing. Anything that's said, we ought obviously take the opposite side. Our instinctive response is rebuttal. Perhaps we find ourselves condemning. We're super critical. It doesn't matter what an individual does. There's always something we can point out that they're not quite doing right. Perhaps those under our leadership always fear that critical response, and anytime they tiptoed to be able to acknowledge some accomplishment, they're always bracing themselves because of some kind of condemnation or criticism. Sometimes we become accusatory when we're feeling the pressure. We all of a sudden become accusatory at other people and to hold the finger at them. Sometimes we express that anger by retaliation. Sometimes that retaliation does not come out in such a forceful, bold, angry way, but it can come in a kind of backhanded, subtle way. Nonetheless, an attempt to retaliate. Sometimes that anger comes off in a demanding spirit. Sometimes it comes out in abuse or emotional abuse, even physical abuse. I had a man one day tell me my wife was just exploding. I was upset. I figured the best thing for me to do was to just walk out the door and take a long walk. He said, when I came back, my wife was more infuriated than when I left. What in the world did I do wrong? I had the chance to sit down with them, and she said, nothing infuriates me more than a man who left conflict that needs a solution. You know, sometimes we're caught right in crosshairs, and we don't know what to do. But the answer is never retreat. Perhaps the most important thing is the hardest thing to do in that moment. And that's to pray, even verbally. Constantly leading couples and families together who are at odds of animosity and tension to just pray together. And it is the hardest thing to ever do. But I'm telling you, as we come before the Lord and navigate some very impossible challenges, nothing melts a soul faster than us coming before the presence of our Lord Jesus Christ. There's a need to understand how to do that, especially when we feel so inadequate or we feel so unqualified to come before the one who can help the most in that crisis. And then I've been guilty of this one, pouting. Walk away, we sulk, we don't say a lot, and no one would ever call us out as an individual that punches holes in the wall. But the thing that kills the atmosphere around us and everyone around us is an attitude of pouting and a cold, wet blanket of silence. And so as we consider, am I angry? Do we find ourselves in one of these profiles? I think it's helpful. It took me years to be able to consider the fact, Ron, you really do have an anger problem. Because I always could see another profile that I did not fit. Understanding these perspectives has helped me to realize anger shows itself in a lot of different ways. James 1:19 shows up there on your page. Wherefore, my beloved brethren. Oh, don't you love that word, beloved? Can't you see James putting his arm around you? Wherefore, my beloved brother, let every man be swift to hear. That's why God gave us two ears and slow to speak. That's why He gave us one mouth. For the wrath of man, what in the world, worketh not the righteousness of God. Nothing brings the power of the enemy into the middle of a situation faster than a response. And there's nothing that brings the presence of God into the middle of a conflict faster. Spirit of humility. And the challenge for every one of us, especially as males, especially as men, is to have step forward into a conflict and carry that responsibility with dignity and with honor. Not to cave to the impulse of reaction and retreat. There are several ways we often justify anger, and I'm now going to just flip over to page 8. We'll come back to page 7. I'm not angry. I'm just frustrated. I'm just annoyed. I'm just hurt. You say, I'm exercising, quote, righteous indignation. The cause justifies my frustration. Sometimes we are quick to say, my angry response serves them right for the way they treated me. If they did not want me to be angry, they should have made some different choices. What does that sound like? Putting the responsibility on somebody else. I would not be so angry if other people were not so stupid. Well, that's what I had one gentleman tell me. He's often telling me that. I wouldn't be so angry if other people weren't so stupid. After he's ripped doors off the hinges and punched holes in the wall, I'm thinking, and who's the stupid one? It's amazing how blind anger makes us, doesn't it? We always somehow think that everyone else is the one with the problem. We say it's just my personality, and I can't help the fact that I get angry. It's just who I am. It's the way I was born. Well, it is true. All of us are born with Adamic nature. All of us, now that we know Christ, know the reality of what it is to have the flesh still part of us, even though the old man's been crucified. But the fact is, God's given to you today a gift. And it's called Everything You Need for Life and Godliness. Perhaps we justify anger by saying, if I don't get angry and yell, people don't think I mean business. Recently had someone tell me, I feel like anger gives me power. Anger gives me authority. It gives me a voice in a situation that makes people line up. It helps get things done. I wanted to pause, put that man on pause for just a moment and ask him, and how well is that working? It is amazing how much anger can accomplish for a minute or for 5 minutes. But do you know how much damage ends up happening, that positive thing, quote, positive thing that seemed to be accomplished by that? We justify anger by saying, I'm not going to let people treat me like a doormat. I deserve to be respected. We justify anger by saying, I'm the leader. I'm the boss. I'm the parent. I'm the pastor. I'm the whoever role you fit. My right to demand respect. My right to demand obedience from those under me. And I definitely can find chapter and verse that shows all of those that are called to submit to our leadership. But the thing that surprises me the most is we'll never find a verse to us men that orders us to make those behind us, those under us, to submit to us. Whenever the Bible talks about submission, it's talking to the wife. And when it's talking to children, it's got the author of Scripture has the ear of the child. Now, as in a child parent-child relation, we do have a huge responsibility based on the book of Proverbs to teach them what it means to listen. But 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3, reminds me of something that's absolutely sobering. I'm always looking backward at all the people that have a chapter and verse responsibility to submit to me. And what I'm overwhelmed by is the fact that I too am under a head. And that head is actually not a human. It's a divine head. Whoa, what an incredible responsibility. All those under me, human head to follow, and there's a sense where all of us are under a divine head. There is very much truth to that. But you realize there's no human head between us as males and God. You and I carry an awesome, sacred responsibility and accountability before our head, the Lord Jesus Christ. I'm just overwhelmed how often, while I'm trying to insist on those following my leadership, often I am failing miserably at being the example to show the way to follow our head. We justify anger. Jesus was angry toward the money changers, so I absolutely have the right to be angry. I'm not going to take the time to develop that story, but sometimes individuals can justify on that account. Ways we justify anger, we say anger's fine as long as I just don't let it show on the outside. Boy, I've said that many times. Anger's fine as long as I don't express it in a sinful way. What I've often been amazed about is while I do everything I can to suppress those angry expressions, all of a sudden the day comes when I surprise myself. I end up saying things under all that pent-up pressure that I never expected myself to. Others around me are acting, my response is disproportional to the incident at hand. And the reason? Because I somehow celebrated myself as virtuous, thinking that I could hold on to anger as long as I didn't show it on the outside. Justify anger. When we say, it's not my intent to hurt, I'm sorry you were offended. Ever said that? God forbid. I hope we never have. But you know, it is a way sometimes we justify anger. Sometimes the hardest challenge in our lives is being able to acknowledge the fact that we actually have a problem with anger. The best people to help us to know whether we have a problem with anger is actually those who live closest to us. When we are convinced we don't have a problem, ask your son, ask your daughter, ask your wife, ask those closest to you, ask your mom, ask your dad. Do they ever feel like they're walking on eggshells in order to tiptoe toward you to be able to open up their heart and soul? Do they feel safe with you? Be able to just share what's down deep in their soul? Or do you somehow feel like the relationships that you have in your life are all cordial but generally marked by silence or marked by distance? Perhaps you feel like, well, there's not a lot of conflict in our house, but truth be known, our home is more marked by silence. Sometimes that's just a sign that others don't feel safe. And no one colors the atmosphere of a home more than us males. Never forget that. Next time you see that saying, if mom ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Remember just for a moment, could it be that in my subtle or not so subtle way, I'm nurturing a lion? Nurturing a tiger, the life of the one I live with. I want to draw your attention here to page number 9, ways we provoke others to anger. And I realize there are two sides to this. This is very helpful for me as I realize ways I can be provoked. Sometimes all we see is the awful response of anger, and as God convicts us of that, we hopefully are quick to say, forgive me for my anger. Become a perpetual confessor without ever slowing down long enough to understand why in the world do I get so angry? What is it that's contributing to my need? What is it that provokes me? But as we think here of us men, I'm also challenged by the words of Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, which gives us the responsibility as well not to provoke others. And we will have several surprising things I've discovered in working with people I think are really important to keep in mind that help us to understand perhaps ways we can be provoked and also ways we can provoke. Perhaps we let decision be made by default. Oh, nothing exasperates so badly as failing to step up to a decision that's ours to make, and perhaps because of uncertainty or passivity, the timeline passes by, and now the decision is made, not on purpose, but by default. We provoke by not being one with our spouse. I'm constantly reminding families that the greatest gift we give to our young people is oneness. Oh, such a nothing hurts and destroys, nothing exasperates our children more than knowing mom and dad are divided. We provoke our children to anger when we administer discipline in a way that's disproportional to an offense. We punish behavior because of personal embarrassment, not because of genuine interest, the training of a child. We make correction and discipline our only point of connection. Oh, you know, there's so much to nurturing and discipling and shepherding a young life. And never underestimate the fact that if God's given you the awesome opportunity and privilege to have those who are in their late teens and 20s still under your roof, they need you more than your 5-year-old ever needed you. I promise you that's the case. Our greatest touch point with them ought not to be primarily corrective. That's a huge piece of our role in their lives. It ought to be constructive. It ought to be encouraging and edifying and nurturing. We provoke when we administer discipline and anger. We provoke when we demoralize with derogatory names in order to express frustration over certain behavior. Perhaps you can think back to a time in your life, having an angry father or other circumstances in your life where someone demolished you, most importantly because they never used your name. Called you everything else in the book except for your name, and it's those things sting with a powerful hurt. We provoke to anger when we communicate neglect by giving freedom to live without boundaries or correction. One of the angriest people I ever held was an individual who said, "The thing that's made me so mad and angry is the fact that my parents never cared. They let me live and do whatever I wanted." I was absolutely shocked when that gentleman told me that. It helped me to realize there's a lot of ways we can exasperate or provoke an individual to anger. Sometimes ways we absolutely anticipate, and perhaps other ways we at least expect. We compare another's strengths and weaknesses against someone else in order to leverage behavioral change. Oh, wow, we can have the best intentions, but nothing just wields a wound like making that comparison. Sometimes we end up medicating behavioral issues. In a child, it's easier to throw them on medicine than to invest yourself in nurture relationships. Sometimes we substitute personal investment and relationship with things. We give them the TV, and we give them video games, we give them movies, and we give them trips, and we give them vacations, and we give everything they could ever want. And we walk away and wonder, why do I have a young person that is so mad? Because they don't need something, they need someone. They need you. We can provoke the anger by holding others to a higher standard than we ourselves follow. I am convinced as we have the chance to walk the journey of faith, we learn so much the further we walk the road. And as we walk the road and learn in the school of experience, our burden swells with those who follow behind. We can become a master at seeking to avoid the pitfalls we have, all the while our lives are still stumbling along the way. God's never looking for perfect people, but He's always looking for honest people. He's always looking for humble people. It makes the difference in the responsibility of nurturing. Sometimes we provoke to anger by not being honest. We shade the truth to manipulate a situation in order to get what we want. And those looking on become exasperated because they know how we manipulate a situation. It doesn't come off as screaming and yelling, but it comes off as deceptiveness. It comes off as trying to protect an image or build an image that just bugs the living daylights out of those closest. Sometimes we provoke the anger by not listening to the thoughts, concerns, and needs of others. We don't listen through everything that they're trying to communicate. We discount their perspective because we just don't see it that way, or we don't remember it that way. We confuse expectations, or we provoke through confusing expectations because of inconsistent communication and discipline. One day we're all over an individual because they're crossing the line, and the next day we give them all kinds of latitude. The next day we drop the gavel with intensity, and the next week we give them all kinds of freedom. And when a young person's in the middle of that reality, the confusion of that can absolutely be exasperating. And sometimes we shatter trust. By disclosing confidential information to those who don't deserve to. There's a lot of ways that we can provoke the anger, and I just encourage us as we consider a list like that, that it's valuable in going forward dealing with anger that we not just be a good confessor, coming to the place of humbly being able to say, "Lord, do I have an issue with anger? Would you forgive me for that?" But being able to understand what are the ways that I demonstrate that, and what are the ways that I perhaps unintentionally provoke. I draw your attention now back to where we were on page 7. I want to simply use this illustration. Years ago, we lived in a home that had a smoke alarm right on the back wall behind our kitchen. On the back wall behind the kitchen was a stairwell that went upstairs, and so the stove was on one side of the wall, the stairwell on the other side of the wall. The smoke alarm sat right on the wall and along that stairwell. And I don't know if you've seen this saying like in a Cracker Barrel, but when dinner's ready, the smoke alarm goes off. Or when the smoke alarm goes off, dinner's ready. Okay? And that was just about true in our house. And that wasn't because the dinner was burnt. It was because we had a super sensitive smoke alarm. The thing would go off and it would absolutely annoy the living daylights out of me. And there's nothing I could do to shut the thing off except pull the battery out. And so I would. It just would annoy us. It would go off frequently and easily. And we knew there was no fire in the house, but we would go and confirm that reality. And I just pulled the battery out. I had to remind myself that when I went to bed that night, I want to make sure that battery was in, because in case there were a fire, I'd want to be notified of that, right? That smoke alarm is ordained, that smoke alarm is designed to point out another issue, right? The smoke alarm is going off as an indication, it's a warning, it's a signal, it's my best friend. As much as it annoys the living daylights out of me, it's my best friend to let me know the possibility that there's a fire in the oven, or there's a fire in some other part of the house. And in a lot of ways, one of the best gifts God's given to us is something called anger. It's that sense that something's wrong. And in a matter of a couple seconds, we can go from that rise in our spirit to a sinful expression of that that absolutely yields carnage. It's that smoke alarm that's going off, and if we're not careful, we can just seek to constantly pull the battery out without taking the time to consider what is anger somehow highlighting. Anger is somehow a signal that's pointing out something else in my life, and if we're not careful, we only feel like the problem is anger itself. I want to just draw your attention to this diagram, because the presenting issues of anger are things like we've already talked about: sarcasm, criticism, retaliation, accusation, silence, abrasive words and actions, isolation and control. Even depression can be its own expression of anger, not in every case, but in some cases, absolutely. And those are always perhaps the easiest things, though never easy, to be able to acknowledge. But if all I come at the end of a conflict and say, "Would you forgive me for my silence? Would you forgive me for my yelling? Would you forgive me for cutting you by my sarcasm? You forgive me for my negativism," I've never gone far enough. I've not gone far enough for me, and I've not gone far enough for them. Because anger was simply a signal letting me know there's a deeper need. Remember those biblical case studies we just walked through just a few minutes ago? One thing I love about this book is it's an incredibly honest book. It's filled with stories. Stories of the lives of men and women, number of men. And it doesn't just paint a glamour picture for those lives. It gives us very careful perspective into their greatest weaknesses. I'm amazed how many angry profiles we find in this book. And even in the ones that we showcased here this morning, it's helpful to realize that not every person's anger issue had the same root problem. Moses' anger and David's anger and Esau's anger and Peter's anger was sourced and fueled by different sets of circumstances. King Saul's anger. I want to just consider, as we think about some of those profiles, here are some of the root causes that I think do all of us well to just consider. Lord, what's the deeper need in my life you want to resolve? Sometimes a real issue is unresolved pain in a life. Oh, it is amazing how much pain screams in our soul. Proverbs 18:14 says, "Man will sustain his infirmity, but a wounded spirit, who can bear?" Have you ever had a broken arm, broken leg, other health issue that was very difficult to navigate? The pain of that always in your face and making you struggle. Pain's a very serious thing to navigate, and as men, we'll do what it takes in order to try to take the next step. We're going to do everything we can to avoid going to the doctor, right? But when it comes to a wounded spirit, wow, there's nothing more serious, nothing more sore, nothing that creates a lot more anger in a life. Those issues left unaddressed. Also think about jealousy and envy, and the profile of King Saul just jumps off the page for me. Think of a man who had everything life could offer, from his skill set, from his appearance, from his position that he held. And yet, every step he took, he was always feeling inferior to everyone around him. He couldn't tolerate someone just being better than him. And it's amazing how much he was turned inside out as father-in-law against his own son-in-law. Jealousy and anger is the rage of a man. Being able to identify where are those areas where I feel insecure, where are those areas where somehow there is plaguing envy in my life. Someone of the men in the prayer meeting this morning prayed James 3 for us. And what a powerful text given to us as James encourages us to ask God for wisdom, a wisdom that is from above. It talks about a wisdom that is peaceable, gentle, easy to be treated, without envy, without hypocrisy, without partiality. You think of inadequacy and inferiority. You think of also secret guilt. I've often been amazed how the profile of David there in 2 Samuel, perhaps more instructive to me than any other profile of the Bible. You'll remember when Nathan the prophet came and confronted King David. Nathan made up a story that David didn't know at the moment was just a made-up story, thought it was a real thing. An individual, a rich man that had stolen a poor man's land. It is amazing how much God uses circumstances in our lives to expose unresolved guilt in our lives. And for King David, he could have walked away from that conversation and said, "Would you forgive me for exploding over that situation that you brought up to me in the kingdom? Would you forgive me for that?" And not have gone far enough to bring us Psalm 51. Often the conflicts that come into our lives are one of God's greatest gifts. It's taken me a long time to be able to say that. Because I can't. But you know, somehow, because we live in a fallen world, conflict is sure to meet us. We never have far to go without encountering. Sometimes it happens on our own account, and many times it happens on someone else's account. But whenever we encounter conflict, you realize it has the potential to be the best gift in your life, because God wants to use it to show us to us, like He sees us, and to show us to us. Show us to us in ways that only conflict has the power to expose. There's a lot of me I would never understand if every day of my life was a walk through the meadow. But there's so much more God is able to help me to see and give me the power to change the moment I walk through the crucible of conflict. Conflict's one of the best gifts in our lives. It shows us to us in ways and in dimensions we can only know by conflict. Also impressed how that anger is always exposing rights and expectations. Things that I feel entitled to. Perhaps I can even find chapter and verse. Those would be rights and expectations, and not chapter and verse, but there's things that we just expect. How many of you can't stand being late? Sometimes it can be something that simple as showing up for a meeting, showing up at church late, that just hurts the living daylights out of us. It can be something that simple that just infuriates us. Because there's rights and expectations that we hold on to. I remind us of that definition that I feel captures, unfortunately, so much of manhood in our world today. My life on my terms. To serve me, and it never comes free. It's always at somebody else's expense. And then finally, fear and anxiety. I am often amazed how fear and anxiety almost is like a pilot light burner. that is burning on a long period of time about circumstances that we feel are out of control, or concerned about what the future is going to look like if this particular situation doesn't get a resolution. We can't see what the future looks like. And so fear and anxiety kind of builds and crescendos inside of our soul, and all of a sudden it doesn't take much use. If we're not careful, we can fixate our attention on the situation at hand and miss the fact that what's been happening is a lot of fear and anxiety over issues that we are burdened about, don't have clear answers for, that now have found an expression and exploding in this particular scenario. I have an individual that owns his own business. And every season, as he works in landscape and mowing, he's dependent on new contracts in order to be able to feed his family, and that's an incredible pressure, incredible responsibility. We seek to help individuals that way. I'm often amazed how men tell me the thing that precedes their explosion of anger is this huge sense of fear, this huge sense of anxiety over responsibilities that they carry. I think about Moses as he carried the responsibility of carrying 1 million people across the wilderness, and there was no Kroger, there was no Pick and Save to take them to along the way. There's no Cracker Barrel or other places. It was the desert. As he's leading them, one of the greatest needs was just simply having food and water. At moments when the people are just ready to climb down Moses' throat, they're ready to pick up stones and kill him, they're convinced he's brought them out to put them in a grave, Moses loses his temper because he feels the incredible pressure for things God never gave him the responsibility to solve. God simply commissioned him to be the one to take them all to God. And you know what? The individual, the profile in the Bible who ended up being one of the angriest men in the Bible shows us what it is to become one of the greatest intercessors in the Bible. And I am convinced that God is not calling us as men primarily to have all the answers to every crisis in our lives. God often has not crowned us with all knowledge. But he has crowned us with incredible inadequacy to bring us to our knees, to help us to understand that one of our greatest commissions is being the most important intercessor. James 1:19 challenges my life so much. The wrath of man never works the righteousness of God. I want to just conclude in these couple minutes with what shows up on page 10. More homes are destroyed by anger than are ever destroyed by alcohol. More homes in our world are destroyed by anger than are ever destroyed by pornography. More homes are destroyed by anger than are destroyed by drugs. And I will be quick to say, anger is often accompanied by other addictive behaviors. There's no mistake about it. But do you realize that it's possible to be free of a lot of vices? Not be free of anger. I'm convinced it's a lot easier to get free of a number of different vices in life without ever being free of the most devastating emotional response, anger. I want to just leave you with these thoughts that I think helps us to just understand that anger is not just an accidental emotional response that can just easily be brushed over. It does leave powerful implications, powerful consequences that God is in the business of redemption. Anger makes us guilty of verbal murder. Whoa, Matthew 5:21 to 22, Jesus talks about that. We don't think of it in those terms, but Jesus helps us to understand the importance of that. Anger exaggerates and complicates and distorts a conflict. Anger nurtures rebellion. That happened so much in the relationship between David and Absalom. Anger shatters trust. Anger sets us on a path to other destructive, sinful behaviors and addictions. Anger invites the presence and power of Satan into the middle of a conflict. That's why in Ephesians 4 it says, "Be angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. Neither give place to the devil." Nothing invites the presence of the enemy and all of his demonic power more than a response of anger. And an unresolved anger opens the door to spiritual, emotional, and physical oppression. Jesus had a conversation with Peter who asked the question I'm convinced all of us have asked one way or another. How many times in the world do I have to continue to forgive someone who just keeps offending? And Jesus concluded that dialogue there with Peter to say, Peter, forgiveness is in your best interest. Forgive for the King's sake. Forgive for your brother's sake, but most importantly, forgive for your sake. Because no one pays the greatest price for anger than we ourselves do by way of spiritual, emotional, and even physical oppressors. Well, may God help us as we step forward in the next session to understand how in the world do we navigate conflict. I'd like us to just bow our heads here as we conclude this session. Perhaps you've never thought of yourself as an angry person, and I'm certainly not the one to make that judgment call in any light. But I do invite us all to lay ourselves honestly and openly before the Lord and say, Lord, am I an angry person with those closest to me? Call me out as an angry person. Perhaps I don't feel fit the profile of someone else I know that is excessively angry, but do I express anger in ways that grieve your spirit? Perhaps you can think this morning of things God just impressed upon you, ways of provoking those under your care to anger. God's given us a sacred stewardship, and our lives are gifted with trials. Our lives are gifted with pain. Our lives are gifted with impossibilities. And as men, it takes an awesome strength to be able to navigate those with dignity and with honor, with faith and obedience. As we bow our heads before the Lord, could we just ask the Lord to help us to step forward through conflict in a way that we are mobilized by the Spirit of God rather than paralyzed by the enemy. Father in heaven, we come to you this morning. And I thank you so much that you want to transform every one of us into the meekest, most influential, powerful men our homes, our churches have ever known. Father, if you could do that transformation in a Moses to kill the man, do that with all of us. Lord, transform us in your precious name, because no one cares like Jesus.